Welcome to the Women in Fire Radio Show, Officer Development, Officer Training. Thank you to Fire Engineering for allowing Women in Fire to be part of their radio show. I'm Lisa Baker, the Southwestern Trustee of Women in Fire. So Officer Development, getting promoted to company officer should be a time for excitement, yet it can be challenging. The company officer is the most important and influential person in the fire service. Yet making the jump from firefighter to company officer is arguably the hardest career move. After making that jump, the success of the member shouldn't fall solely on the newly promoted company officer. The fire chief who promoted that member should have a vested interest in making the transition work. Many new company officers are proficient in on the fire ground, especially if they have responded to numerous calls throughout their career. But as we know, the role of the company officer isn't just being in command at the scene of an emergency. There's the human resources part, the part that if not handled correctly, will get the department in trouble. Many new company officers will tell you the hardest part they felt as being a new company officer was how to lead effectively and still be so-called one of the guys. Officers are part of the crew, even when the company isn't making emergency responses or the company officer isn't making decisions such as what to cook for dinner, they remain the company officer and they must be vigilant to the crew behavior at all times. They must look out for the crew safety. As a rule, firefighters making the transition to company officer are usually not given the proper training and tools necessary to become a successful manager. In most departments, the process merely entails riding the seat or taking a promotional exam where they are then promoted. As we know, a company officer is the person in charge of a crew, the firefighters, and their responding apparatus. This entails not only, like I mentioned, responding to calls aspect of the job, but the overall management and leadership of the crew at the scene of an emergency and at the fire station. A problem many new company officers face, as I mentioned, is the buddy to boss. Firefighters will test the new officer to see what they can get away with. A company officers need to have effective leadership. Many new company officers take a test and are given a badge and put in the front seat without any formal training. Yet the future of the fire service depends on the ability of current leaders to develop future leaders. This should include the ability to make leadership decisions, operating from the foundation of the department's core values, taking responsibility, demonstrating accountability, and setting a role model example in the work environment. So I'm very happy to introduce my guests tonight. I have Deputy Chief Heather Mosdean from the Oakland Fire Department. I have, Shannon Teamer, a battalion chief with the Orange County Fire Department. And then I have Heidi Simon, a lieutenant from the South Metro, which is in Colorado Fire Department. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. So do you feel that a member should receive formal training from the agency prior to becoming a company officer? So either before they make a promotional list or after they make a promotional list, before we put them out in the front seat of an apparatus, should they actually receive some type of formal training? Whoever wants to go first.
I can chime in on that one, Chief Baker. I do believe that it's important. Professional development surely should not start when they're at that level. It takes time to develop our people. The expectation, like you said, is for them to now transition into a role where they're being the leadership within the station. They're not no longer more tactical like they would be on normal calls. They're expected to make these decisions that, you know, again, don't involve fire necessarily. So it would be ideal that we train them prior to being in that position. Also, it can kind of help them refine their skills as far as those leadership qualities we're looking for, that the decision-making that we're looking for, and even the administrative part of that position. It does change very drastically. Some of them are expected to now discipline their personnel, things of that nature. Also, participate in those conflict resolutions where they're now that person that ensures that the crew meshes together. So we can't expect, like I said, people to be able to transition to that role without preparing them first.
Yeah, I'll chime in also. I totally agree. I think that it's really important for a couple of reasons. If we give our officers or our future officers the training to become an officer before they get there, it does two things. One, it makes them a better firefighter. When they know what their boss is expecting of them, they, you know, they can do a better job. Also, jumping into that seat as a new officer is so overwhelming just in the fact that anything can happen at any given moment. So the more we can train those members ahead of time with stuff that, you know, like the paperwork and the logistics and, you know, the administrative tasks, as much as we can give them on a platter beforehand, it sort of can make that transition easier, in that then they only have to worry about the stuff that's thrown at them that, you know, that they're not expecting. Whereas if we don't do that, then all of it is new. All of the tasks and mundane stuff, all of the personnel problems, all of the other stuff that gets thrown at them, they have to deal with that too. So I think you're doing a huge disservice if you don't give your future officers some training before putting them in the seat.
Lisa, I would have to completely agree with both chiefs. The formal training not only prepares the person to take the role on, but it also prepares the people around them to know what the expectations of an officer are and how to best support the officer, because they are going to transition into a role where they're going from the buddy to boss. And if your peers can help support that and recognize that you're going to have to be operating on a different level, then I think overall the officer will be more successful.
Thank you. So do you feel that some of this falls on the member to seek out the information? If, let's say, if your agency or you know of agencies that don't provide the company officer training prior to becoming an officer or even once they're promoted, do you feel that like it falls on the member to seek out the skills necessary to be an officer prior to wanting to become an officer?
I'd like to speak to that, Lisa. I think that there's a significant lack of a significant disconnect here between that philosophy and what should the department be responsible for applying the expectations that the department should have of their people. If you went into any other organization, we wouldn't expect somebody to get into a position of management without providing them a specific formalized training. So if you're expecting people to individually go out and seek that knowledge, then what happens is you have a lack of an inclusive environment. You have the favoritism, you have the assimilation bias, all sorts of and of the unconscious biases come into the situation, and you don't end up having, you know, good diversity of officers, and you really don't have good training overall, because maybe the people that are best assimilated by some of the leadership are not actually the best leaders. So I think formalizing the training and making especially the basic expectations formal and upfront is critical.
I'll chime in also. I think we should have some degree of expectation that people who want to be officers will seek out additional education, because I don't think the department can provide all of it. However, you run into a couple of things where, depending on where the individual seeks that information from, they may be taught something totally different than, you know, that's than what's in line with your values as an organization or your SOPs or whatever the case may be. So I think that a good candidate will seek out as much learning opportunity as they can, either informally or formally. But I do agree with what Heidi said, that, you know, that as a department, if you rely on that, you kind of set your department up for failure, because it's not consistent and you don't necessarily get the best candidates, and you do pigeonhole sort of the ones you get. So I think it's really important that we have both informal and formal training for people before they become officers.
I recently did a assessment center where a chief from their department actually spoke to us, saying that they did not have a company officer development training. And once they were given the badge, they were going to be in the front seat. So to make sure, you know, try to pick the best candidates available. And I know that's been the history of the fire department. And Heidi, you brought up a good point that no jobs where you're mid-level manager, do you not get any type of formal training to be that mid-level manager? And I think historically in the past, I know it's getting a little better now, the fire department would do that. You would get promoted on a Friday and you might be the company officer on a Saturday with no formal training whatsoever. So I'm glad to hear that, more agencies are providing training to their people before we put them in the front seat. So
Lisa,
yes,
just quickly. So while I say we have to have a very formalized process in the promotion of our, especially in our entry-level officer ranks, there's also that other level that Heather's really talking about. And it's those people that go above and beyond to seek out more, whether it's individual leadership development or interest in other department areas. Those are the people that are going to stand outside and become your future leaders. To give everyone that that opportunity that is fair and equitable, you have to have some sort of formalized situation.
You do, or you're setting them up for failure, so to speak. So does any of your agencies have a company officer development program? And if so, can you expand on that a little bit?
We in Orange County, we have minimum standards, of course, that we require for our company officers, and that's Fire Officer 1 and 2, which is governed by the state of Florida, basically about 10 classes that gives them anything from building construction all the way up to the company officer leadership type class. And although those are essential, we do also offer an academy. Previously it was 4 weeks, but due to COVID, we had to cut it down to 2 weeks, but it's components of administrative duties, as well as command school, as well as scenarios to where they can take those command tactics and actually put them into play, because we're predominantly EMS. Sometimes our personnel don't get that hands-on experience on those calls because we're running a lot of medical calls. So we do give them opportunity to run command. Again, we do fight fire, but we're still looking for them to hone in on those skills. So again, it contains the administrative components as well as some of the strategy and tactics they would use on a fire scene. So that encompasses basically what we do for our new company officers. We also, to add to that, have a minimum of 10 shifts where they ride with a seasoned company officer. That way, again, they're in that seat, but they have a type of a security blanket to where if they do maybe not make the best decision for that call, they have someone there to kind of give them some guidance and point them in the right direction.
Lisa, I'm sorry, Heather, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We have a pretty formalized entry-level fire officer program where we also require Fire Officer 1 certification prior to entering into the program. We used to have a wonderful command academy. Obviously, COVID put the kibosh on a lot of our programs, but we are renewing that. And I hope that I think we had a lot of success with that. I think that gives a good playing level for all of our people to know what the expectations of leadership are and hear it in one place. But we then have a task book that they have to complete that speaks to what you talked about, the number of calls they have to run, different types of calls, whether simulated or real, because obviously we can require them to run 10 fire calls and that may or may not happen. So we can do simulations, whether in our command simulation center or in down at the training grounds. But I think that this really sets them up for a level of comfort. It also gives them the opportunity to see how the crews are going to work and help them out in the field, so that they don't get into that situation where now I'm the boss and you have to do everything I say, and kind of that micromanaging, don't do anything until I say so. It really creates a more fluid environment for them. Where I think we lack is the true leadership and true leadership development of that entry level management, and getting to know your strengths and weaknesses and your own personal values and why you're becoming an officer. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that, but I think that's where we lack, but we do have a pretty significant program. Then you have to actually test out of that program before you can test to promote.
Oh, wow.
That's great. I'm getting good ideas from both of you. In Oakland, we have a bunch of courses through the California State Fire Marshal. You have to take your company officer courses, and you have to have completed all those courses. And then the task book now is a part of getting that official certification, which you can't get until you're actually in the position. So we've parlayed that with our promotional binders so that once somebody gets promoted, there's tasks that are online with the state task book, so they can get that company officer cert while completing their promoted probationary period. And then through the course of my career, we've had an academy that prepares people for the role of officer. What we're trying to do now is to do a more formalized acting higher rank academy for members who wish to act in the seat, so that they can get everything from fireground experience to administrative duties to personnel, all of the things that you might do when you're in the seat, so that they can learn about that ahead of time. And then once they get promoted, the plan is to do a leadership academy where we kind of teach them, like, okay, now you have the badge. This is what we expect from you as a leader, and to really pull them out of that buddy and into that boss role. So it's a kind of a multi-tiered approach, and we're really just trying to do a better job of creating our good lieutenants from the get-go that we can then mold into better captains, and we can really build the leadership as we build them up through the ranks.
Heather, you mentioned that it had been on and off, and I think that's throughout the whole nation, the on and offness of officer development programs. I mean, a lot of departments start them and then they stop them. And from what my understanding is, the biggest challenging is in offering a company officer school or development program is the cost and the backfill, because you have to take people off shift and put them on a 40-hour week. And as we know right now, staffing is issues all across the United States, with most fire departments having enough staffing without making mandatories every day. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that agencies are facing, is the how to develop it where it meets the needs of the agency without affecting the staffing and decreasing morale, so to speak. So what do you feel should be included in an officer development program?
Yeah, Lisa, I talked about it a little bit, but I think it has to be everything, starting with, time management, with how to deal with personnel. You have to cover the basics about, computers and usage. We have some officers that get promoted that really don't know their way around the computer. Now, as we get the younger generation, these kids have grown up with computers, so they're pretty well versed in it. But radio, how to talk on the radios, communicating with other units. And that doesn't even touch like the medical calls or the fire ground problems. And then you throw in, hazmat scenarios or any other sort of incident. So it's a lot. And I think that if you start with your first company officers and give them a foundation that then you can build upon, because you can't cover it all in a 2-week academy or a 1-week academy, or, it's a lot to even cover in a 6-month probationary period, with the ultimate goal being to get real on-scene experience. That's kind of like the gold standard, but you could work a whole career and not get as much experience as you need, which is why it's nice to get new officers together in a group to share their experiences, because you can learn from other officers' experiences, maybe not as well, but pretty well from other officers sharing their experiences. So that's kind of my feeling in a nutshell. It's a lot. It's a lot to learn.
Lisa, I agree with Heather. I think that we have to start I always refer to the pyramid as how we're growing our people, and they have to have really strong baseline firefighter skills. And, we sometimes struggle with that when we're promoting people maybe off of the medic unit, and they want to become officers and they have good leadership skills, but you're wondering about their firefighting skills. They have good basic skills, but are they ready to take on the crew and lead them with those skills? So I think encompassing some educational processes for them where they're actually teaching, because we know we all learn better when we teach a skill. So they're actually taking crews and taking that training role and actually teaching people and improving their firefighting skills, and recognizing that they're not going to have all of the answers, but they have a crew that they can solve all of the problems, because that is their answer, is their crew. And that in doing that, you're developing some of that leadership. I also think that recognizing, Heather, you brought this up, that some people don't recognize just the basic workings of the fire department. For instance, what you get on a call, what your call response is going to be. What do I get when I call from just a simple motor vehicle accident and I upgrade it to an extrication? What is the response that I'm going to get? And how am I going to manage that if the chief is delayed? So really getting that knowledge about the calls, the knowledge about the human resources, and how they're going to take care of their people if they get hurt, or if they have a problem at home, or if they have a family member that passes away. So really policies and procedures from the HR perspective, as well as the fire perspective. And then also, do they understand? A lot of people go through the Fire Officer One here. We do Fire Officer One first. They go through this book, but I don't think they truly understand what the JPRs are asking them to do and these skill sets that it's truly setting them up to learn. So I think that's up to us to mentor them, to help them understand how these JPRs are going to apply. And then that just kind of goes back to that whole having some sort of formalized program. Heather, you talked about, and I think we're going to get to that, about the probation period and if you have one and how you're going to handle that. So I look forward to talking about that a little bit more as well.
I agree with both what Heather and Heidi are saying. I think because of how the fire service has evolved, it is requiring us as departments to look at these programs, look at our company officers, and reevaluate what we required in the past versus what needs to be done now. That formal education, I mean, maybe even at an associate's degree level, it's going to teach them those soft skills of writing and, you know, being able to use these Office, you know, Microsoft Office, you know, something as simple, not as simple for us in the fire service because we're so used to doing everything tactically. Now we got to transition. But again, I think what's going to help all our departments is reevaluating the fire service as a whole and just in progressing and moving forward as we will. So.
You all made some really good points, especially you, Chief Teamer, about the evolving. It's not the fire service is changing. And I mean, a lot of people don't like change, as we all know, because they're afraid of change, or that's the way the famous term, that's the way we've always done it. But that's not, just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean that's the best way we should be doing it, so that we do need to reevaluate in what we're doing. And you're right, things have totally changed. I mean, computers and such. I mean, people have iPads on calls now to do PCRs and such. Heidi, you made a good point to use the crew to solve problems. I think that's important that people learn because how to use their resources, that we teach them how to use their resources. I think some members get promoted and they have that mindset that I'm the company officer and it's my way or no way. And a lot of times people, younger members, especially as departments are becoming younger and younger, members with not a lot of time on are getting promoted and they go in with the mindset, well, I'm the company officer and I know everything, so to speak. And they have senior crews. And if they actually sat down and talked to the senior members of their crew, they probably could learn a lot in 15 or 20 minutes, just listening to the crew member, the senior crew members who've been exposed to a lot more than probably a new company officer. So I think that's important that we teach our younger members how to use their resources, and the resources actually are the people that are going to be working for them and that are on their crew.
Yeah, Lisa, I'd like to speak to that because it kind of goes back to that, to our inbox scenarios, right? Where we, a lot of people think that those aren't valid. I think they're extremely valid because you're setting your expectations with your crew. And I can't just set my expectations with my crew without knowing what their expectations are and how they're trained and how are we going to run this simple bread and butter call, whether it's a fire or a medical, how are you used to do it? Here's what I would like to do. How do we bridge that gap? That's something you do at the kitchen table, not on scene of a call. So I like to tell my crews that we're going to run this democratically in the station, and we're going to try and solve all these problems now so that when we get on the fire scene and I ask you to do this, you have the trust in me that I'm seeing something that is making the decision that this is what we need to do. With that said, having the trust in them that they're saying back to you, hey, I'm seeing something you're not, and being able to listen to that. But it's not as much as of a discussion because you do it before. But learning those skills of having that conversation, setting expectations, and quite frankly, having the boardroom meeting before you go out to the field. That's something that I think those inbox scenarios set up. It's something that we can teach our people. So I just love that if we can teach our people that better.
I think that's one of the first things that any new company officer should do is how you mentioned it, is sit down the first day and set their expectations of the crew and what the crew could expect of them. I think that's going to help alleviate some possible issues as well as personnel issues and such down the road as well. So Heidi, you did say that we're going to get to the probationary period, and we are going to get to the probationary period. So does your agency have a probationary period for a newly promoted company officer that involves drills, much like a probationary firefighter has to do daily drills? And do you feel it's effective for a company officer development to have a probationary period?
I'll start. We do not have a probationary period, and I have some heartache over calling it a probationary period because our process to become promoted is so stringent. So it's typically 6 to 9 months before you're cleared to act, and then you act and then you test. So the probationary period is really when you're an actor and when you're doing your packet. However, I think that we are strongly missing the boat by not providing some sort of mentorship and follow-up through that first year as an officer. We always tell our people to, you know, pick someone that's going to be your ear, you know, pick your counselor, pick your coach, pick your mentor, but we don't necessarily ensure that they have that person, and we don't follow up with them to make sure that they're using them. And I think that's where in our department in particular, we're working on.
I'll chime in. I talked about it a little bit. We do have a probationary period of 6 months for our promoted officers, but for as long as I can remember, it's been more of a, you get drills and a probationary binder. Oftentimes the drills haven't been updated and they're not pertinent. And a lot of it is, for lack of a better term, pencil whipped. And so part of the thing that I've tried to change since becoming the deputy chief is to ensure that we do that, because I think officers, especially new officers, crave that knowledge, just like new firefighters do. I think they crave that knowledge, and they crave the chance to speak with captains and chiefs, but, you know, battalion chiefs, assistant chiefs, deputy chiefs, to get knowledge. But there's no pathway really for them to do, or they don't know how to start the conversation. So by having those probationary drills, it opens up the door, and then you get to sit with somebody and you get to pick their brain, and that spurs a conversation that then you can parlay into something else. And so I think just having a formal probation period with drills and you're tasked at hitting people at different levels to gain that knowledge, I think it's a huge benefit to a new officer. And I hope that, you know, going forward, that our process is a little more formal, not to make it more difficult for someone, but just to really set them up for success.
I agree. We have our formal mentoring process, but the follow-up like a year later, that'd be awesome. The ability for that, you know, new lieutenant to reach back to that seasoned lieutenant. Again, they do it informally, but something more formal, something in writing, something that assures it gets done. Because again, when you get busy, as we all know, sometimes it kind of slips through the cracks. So something more formal, something I'd like to see as well. I think it, like Chief said, would benefit quite a few, the majority of our departments that aren't doing anything right now. So,
yeah. I think especially if you don't have a stringent process before you get promoted, you have to have a probationary, you know, and that would be similar to, you go through the academy, you learn your basic skills, but if it's during your probationary year as a firefighter, you're learning so many more things. So I think if you're not able to do that prior to them getting promoted and give that really strong background, then you have to do it afterwards. But either way, they need to be continued professional development, because I think that that is one place we've suffered throughout the fire service in many years. And Chief, like you said, with change, we don't like it, but we need it. We need to, you know, we need to keep up with what society's expectations are. We expect professionals, so we need to continue to develop them.
Yeah, y'all made some excellent points. I agree with you. And Heather, your point of the drills need to be pertinent and not just pencil whipped and stuff is real important. I think some agencies think that we'll give them drills and stuff and this is what they need to know, and they're outdated and such. And that, in their mind, that's the way they're doing professional development. And I commend you for wanting to change that process, Heather, because it's been needing change for a while. So I think most people that want to promote to company officer probably have a pretty good mindset of what a company officer does, especially if they're currently working with a company officer that's mentoring them, or that's a good, strong company officer, not just in fire ground operations. I mean, a lot of people think that a company officer just is the one standing outside the fire giving commands. And I think your better candidates for promotion, as well as your better company officers, realize that there is a lot more than just running a fire to be a company officer. So do you feel that the majority of people in your agency, or anyone that you might have talked to at conferences or stuff, do they really know what the role of a company officer entails without professional development? Or do they, I mean, I had somebody once ask me to help them prepare for a test. And the first question I asked was, well, why do you want to be a company officer? And they really couldn't answer the question. And it came down to, well, it's more money. And I sent the person away saying, well, go figure out what a company officer does and make sure it's something you want to do. So do you feel that the majority of people that are company officers today or aspire to be company officers actually realize what the role of a company officer entails?
Chief, I'd like to take that one. I want to kind of piggyback off of what Chief Mosin said earlier. When it comes to our firefighters being developed early on, like, I think that a lot of us may have missed that opportunity. So now, we sitting in that company officer seat, they may not understand all the ramifications, especially as a new officer. Obviously, if you're seasoned, you've gone through that stuff. But it's almost like, why would we continue to allow others to go through that when we've all been through it? So I don't think our new company officers always understand that what their role is. I do think situations, unfortunately, guide them to, make the right decisions and now understand the role. But we got to get away from that as well, because this is, again, how we end up in the news in these articles. And because they don't quite understand, and things slip, and now we have an issue. And so as, departments, as the fire service, we, again, like we've said previously, have to work on developing those people in that manner. But to, and get back to the question, I don't think, some of the new ones are ready. I know our department's pretty young. We're doing the best we can to get them ready and to develop them. But with the way the workforce is going, and, we just have a lot of promotions in place, like, it's just sometimes difficult to keep up with those, the changing, ever-changing times. So, I'd like to see more of that development throughout their career versus just waiting until they get in that seat to better prepare them.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is hard right now, I think, for a lot of agencies. They're younger. A lot of retirements people are leaving the fire service in numbers that we haven't seen previous. And it is hard to keep the ranks motivated at this point, so to speak. But so what are some of the, what should a firefighter who aspires to be a company officer already need to be proficient at? And I think a lot of them think that it's just, like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, it's just that, I'm going to go to a fire, I'm going to put the fire out, and that's it. They don't realize other avenues that they may already need to be proficient at. So in my mind, there's areas that someone that aspires to be a company officer should already be proficient at prior to becoming a company officer, that might just be a little bit refining their skills once they do make that company officer level. So what skills do you think that somebody that's getting promoted or just got promoted should already be proficient at, so to speak?
Chief, I can take that. I think there's a couple of things. I mean, ultimately, you have to be a good firefighter And not that you have to be a good firefighter to be a good company officer, but you have to have a good knowledge of the job, right? In order to guide somebody in how to do the job, you have to have a good handle on the job. But I think ultimately it comes down to really like your emotional intelligence, like your ability to deal with other people, because as a company officer, now you have to interact with families or with, you know, with citizens on the street. Like there, you have a whole nother layer of people that you have to interact with. And also you have this crew where you're a brand new officer. You probably don't get to pick your crew. You probably don't get to choose. So now you're given a group of people and you have to make a team out of them. So you have to do a quick assessment of what their strengths and their weaknesses are and how you can use what they bring to the table to make your team. So you have to have a good understanding of the job that you have to do. And then you have to have the ability to use what you have to mold it into the team that you need. So I think, you know, just a firm foundation in your job and then the emotional intelligence and the people skills to really be effective at it. There's a lot of other things, but I think those are kind of the keystones of it.
Heather, I teach a class on getting to know yourself better so that you can represent yourself better, not just on your oral resume and your testing process, but really it shows up in the station. And that is not just finding your personal values, but setting your own mission statement so that you have something to guide what you do on a daily basis better. So you have all those foundations of your firefighting skills and your policies and procedures. And then what are you there for? And then finding out what your strengths are. Maybe you're a tech rescue geek, I call them, but that's your thing. So bringing that to the table, especially if you're assigned to not a tech rescue station. So you recognizing what your strengths are, but also recognizing that will help you to then recognize the strengths of your people and bring it all together, hopefully.
I absolutely, absolutely agree.
I think Heather, you made a good point. It's somebody has to have the people skills, the ability to communicate, to have that emotional intelligence and the ability to interact with not only your crew, but the citizens. I think that's what gets a lot of company officers in trouble is their inability to communicate with their crew and with the citizens. So what should a firefighter, I'm sorry. So what are the important traits a company officer should possess? Either they already have them or something that needs to be in a company officer development program.
If I can start off with this one, I'm going to go with confidence. I'm also going to go with decisiveness and integrity. All those things are going to be important for them to lead others when they're in that station again, and the issues arise that we don't necessarily know how to deal with because they don't have to happen that often. It's going to take that confidence in that person, obviously educated first, but that confidence to be able to be that boss now, maybe who was their buddy later. Again, integrity, you know, doing what's right, depending on what's going on with your crew, that's going to help with some of those maybe cultural diversity issues or things of that nature. They're going to have to stand up, be that officer that they can be. And then the decisiveness, you know, they're going to be in situations to where they got to make that decision in a split second. And it may not be related to safety on a fire ground. You know, it may be something where, there's something escalating within the station and now they have to be able to think on their feet, act quickly. So I think those are three important traits that company officer should possess, I'm sorry.
Heidi or Heather, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, right? There's so many different facets that go into being a good company officer. You have to be able to take ownership. You have to be able to manage your time. You have to be able to get buy-in from your crew. You know, like Heidi said, you have to know your strengths and your weaknesses. I always say, like, none of us know it all. So you have to be able to recognize what you don't know and trust the people around you, you know, or develop a trusted network around you that you can rely on to ask the questions when you don't know. And then quickly make that decision that's in the best interest based on the information you're given. So there's so many things that go into it. And you can be really good at some things and not so good at others and use the team around you to make yourself better. I think ultimately it does come down to knowing yourself. Integrity is always right there at the top. Like if you're doing what's right, you can't be wrong. If you're firm and you're consistent and you're fair, you're not going to get yourself in trouble. So yeah, I think there's a lot to it. There's a lot of skills that you need. But the biggest thing is to recognize what you don't have and work on either surrounding yourself with people who do have that or to try to improve on those blind spots that we have.
Heather, you made a good point. There's self-assessment tests that people could take to figure out what they are, their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that included in a company officer program or training or such, maybe that should be included in one so that members do realize that maybe they are a little weak in recognizing what they don't know. I mean, some people unfortunately do have the mindset that they know everything, and sometimes their pride gets in the way of asking for help when they don't know something, especially with a younger crew, as I mentioned before. I mean, if they're the young officer and they have an older crew that's been in the department longer than them, their pride might get in the way for them to recognizing that this crew might have more knowledge on a certain subject matter than they do, and to have the ability to, you know, communicate that and say, you know, I don't know this. Can you help me with this? And I think that would go a long way in building the trust within that crew. I could be wrong, but.
Chief, I think you're absolutely right. I think once the ego gets in the way, it can be debilitating, right? If people think they know, or they're trying to, you know, convey that they know more than they do, then you're never going to ask questions and people are never going to offer you help. And you end up getting into the situation where you don't know what to do and you're afraid to ask. So I think if people can really admit, like, none of us know it all and we all need somebody else. And if you can admit that you don't know it and leverage those around you, you'll be much more successful as a company officer.
And I think you're going to gain the respect of your crew right away by mentioning that you don't know it all. And Heidi, you mentioned about the setting expectations on your first shift, letting the crew know what you expect of them and what they expect of you. And do you think it'd be a good idea to say, you know, I don't know everything? Or how would you word that since you...
Well, I think you have to create a relationship, right? You have to recognize who has some more experience than yourself, but maybe you have a crew of all new people. So I don't think going in and showing all your cards is going to be necessarily the right thing to do until you create this psychological safety for your crew and for yourself. Because you're expected to be the leader and the manager of that crew. But you have to develop those relationships. And I think through talking, if you have a strong knowledge of what your policies and procedures and your expectations of your department are, then you should be able to work through those. I'm weak on VNN or search, but instead of necessarily saying that, it's like, hey, I haven't done this for a while. Let's go out and train on this. I want to see where we're at. And using that as an opportunity for everybody to show their strengths and their weaknesses. And then you're building those relationships and that safety. But I think that Heather brought this up a couple of times, so I don't want to skip it, is the emotional intelligence part of it. And maybe we need to be paying a little more attention to training people on what truly emotional intelligence is earlier on in their career so that they can recognize when they're kind of getting themselves into trouble along that line of setting those crew expectations. You know, I have to do that almost daily because I'm a rover. After all these years, I still am at a different station every shift. And it's tough to go through the same thing every day. But I'm recognizing that because of the newer people, I actually have to do that. And I don't want to come in there as that I know it all. So having them lead that conversation, what do you guys expect from me? What are we doing today? And then being able to backfill in, well, these are my expectations, but helping them to kind of drive the conversation might be a good thing for newer officers as well.
Heidi, you just made a good point about with the newer people setting the expectations and such, and that you move around with the departments. Some departments are so young right now that you might have three or four, they all might be on probation. So you might have a combined experience level of 2 to 3 years. And so, I mean, how, as a new company officer, if you walk into that situation, what would be the best scenario? Because they're knowing, obviously they know you just got promoted, and let's say you might have 4 or 5 years on, and they know, and we know that sometimes before we get to a station, people already know things that we may or may have not have done. Even the newer people like to get in on the talking of what might have happened across town or 3 years ago, even though they weren't there, they know what happened. So how would a new company officer deal with that situation? Like going in, you have a brand new crew. I'm not a brand new crew, but let's say they've got, you know, not a lot of experience.
Well, I'd like to hear from the other chiefs about this as well, but I think that's a really good question, because that is where we're at. We have, I think 3 years is our minimum online time before you can get your task book to become a company officer. So can you imagine getting on shift and you are an acting officer and you have maybe 4 years of experience total, and you have 2 guys that you went to academy with, and you have a gal that just is a rookie. And so you have really a limited, a limited well of experience for you to draw on. We have to make sure that our people are prepared in those situations. And that's where I go back to that whole development process, is we have to make sure that our task books are robust, and that they get the support and the training that they need. Cause you can make a task. I have a task book for our captain's packet that is super robust, but we don't necessarily provide the support to get those tasks done. So we have to ensure that we're doing that. That takes money. So if we're going to talk about succession planning in the future, we need to recognize that it costs money, but it costs a lot more money to have problems when officers go bad. But this is a problem, Lisa, that we are going to be dealing with, or I should say, some of you are going to be dealing with. I am a short timer in the future of our departments, because I see that the people are younger, they have less experience, they're going to be promoting quicker. We're not having less fires. So the situations are just as dire, and people are going to be not living the same length of careers as we all have. So the turnover is going to be there because the lifestyles are different these days. So these are going to be really big challenges for us in the future.
If I may add, without our experience with hiring so many new firefighters here lately, and just trying to understand, it's not all generational, but a lot of it is, understanding that you got to communicate as a company officer. And we've talked about that throughout, you know, the show, but just communicating, and also communicating on what level that is for them. So sometimes we're getting a task done. They just want to know why. They just want that purpose. Having them understand that, listening to them. We've talked about that. Those are important things, allowing them to have a voice to a certain extent, because again, sometimes they can overrun you. But knowing, you know, before, as Heidi and Heather mentioned, what your limits are as far as, you know, what you need to know as a company officer will allow you to have that, to give them the ability to lead, to give them the ability to just come forward and be who they want need to be. And like I said, I'm trying to understand them a lot more, because we are getting, the fire service is getting younger, and we don't have a choice but to evolve, as we talked about earlier. And so those are some of the things that I've noticed, that they just want to be heard sometimes. And maybe you don't have an explanation, or you know, this is why we need to do it. But, and then again, as a company officer, you educate yourself in how the fire service works and how your chain of command works and how your department works within the government. And you'll be able to provide more information to our younger folks and those who are just starting the fire service. And I think, again, that'll help a new company officer kind of get that relationship going with their crew as well, and build that trust and rapport to be able to have a successful environment.
When people know why they're doing what they're doing, they're going to be more engaged in their work. That is just how it is. And so the more engagement you can have, the better off your crew will be. So take the time to explain to your people why we do the things we do. And if you don't understand it as a new officer or an older officer, then take the time to learn that, because it just creates engagement. And I think, you know, the adage of you can learn something new every day, point that out. Hey, this is what I learned today. Have that dinner. Like, okay, what went good today? What went bad? What did you learn? Share those experiences. And I think that we'll just all create a better environment.
Yeah, I agree with Shannon, Heidi. Both of you brought up some really, really valid points. I think we are going to see, you know, we're starting to see it, but I think we are going to see over the next, you know, 20, 30 years that people aren't staying in this job as long. So the revolving door of new firefighters coming in, people promoting earlier it's going to stay. It's not going to, you know, that's not going to go away. We're going to have younger officers, younger chiefs, just, you know, less time in the seat. And that's just going to be something we have to deal with. Now, how we deal with that, I think we have to go back to sharing experiences, because you're not going to have the time to gain all the experiences, and doing that through training and education. And it really is going to have to be robust. And we're going to have to put that forward, because it's going to be impossible for people to gain all the experience that they need without that information sharing and that training and education. So I think it's really pertinent that we're having this conversation. And I think that we just have to keep doing, you know, this kind of stuff to educate each other and to share our experiences across the board and across all levels, because the fire service is definitely going to need it, as we're going to see in the next, you know, in the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, I agree, Heather. People are not, it used to be a career where you'd come and you'd see people stay for 30 years, 20, 30 years, and then they'd retire. Now you're seeing people retiring much earlier. But I think some of the things you brought it up, some of the things that we've discussed should be taught prior probably to someone becoming a company officer, like communication. I mean, sometimes when, like Heidi, you made a good point, listening, have a voice. I mean, sometimes when people are on probation, I mean, especially back in the day, it was like you were told to not have a voice and be quiet and don't ask why. And we have to get away from that, because some of the newer generation, they actually do have some skills that company officers, old and new, probably could learn from. Like Heather mentioned, the computers, that people come in without a knowledge of computers and such. And the younger generation, I mean, the ones that we're seeing now in the fire department grew up, you know, playing the video games and are computer and savvy. So, I mean, I think that we should, as agents, organizations, we need to get away from that the probationary firefighter really doesn't have a voice, and let them know they do have a voice in certain situations. I mean, and one of the things that is to allow them to ask questions, like Shannon mentioned, on certain aspects. I mean, you don't want them asking the question in the middle of a fire of why you're asking me to do such, but I mean, educating them that, you know, ask questions, that's how you learn, and not to shut them down. I think we have to get out of that mindset of, you know, you're new, be quiet and just do what I say, and because I said so mindset. And then we're developing, when we're doing that, we're teaching them the skills they need even before they're becoming company officers, even if they don't have any aspirations to be a company officer. I mean, sometimes a company officer might have to go to a meeting and such, and we're putting someone in the seat to ride, so to speak, that it's just off probation or a year off probation. So that maybe not doesn't even want to be a company officer, but by default, you're now in charge. So I think that if we start developing all our members, even when they're in recruit school, probationary school, whatever we call it, to ask questions, to, you know, understand the process. I mean, then I think once they do have that aspiration to be a company officer, or even they don't have a company officer, they're going to have the knowledge of the chain of command, your SOPs, your SOGs and such, that once they do, I mean, then the learning curve is going to be a little shorter for somebody that we're allowing them to do these things, as opposed to don't ask questions, we do it, you know, I'm the company officer, we're going to do it this way.
Well, Lisa, we're always trying to create firefighters that can work alone, right? Not necessarily alone on the fire ground, but that are self-sufficient, that understand the department. So when you're empowering them with the knowledge, that just creates informal leaders, and then hopefully will create leaders in the future. But also these kids today, I call them, but they are growing up in an environment in their schools where they are being taught leadership way before we were. they're being taught these traits, these qualities, these opportunities in high school and in junior high school. And so we if we want to retain our employees and build them, which we have the opportunity to, we need to catch up. So I think that you nailed it with all of that.
Yeah, I think the newer firefighters, a lot of them are coming in with the toolbox that has a lot more tools in it than the older generation, as far as you talked about it, the management and leadership and such that they're getting in, I mean, middle school, high school and such, and outside entities as well, like sports teams and Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts and stuff. So their toolbox are a lot more fuller than some of the older generation firefighters, which necessarily is a good thing.
They have a lot to offer. We can teach them the tools of our trade, and they can teach us the tools of the world that they've learned.
Exactly. So I think sometimes shutting down the probationary firefighter is not always the best idea. So we know a majority of the issues a company officer is going to need to deal with aren't going to be on the fire ground. They're going to be conflict resolution and personnel issues. The things that, as we've mentioned, is it gets departments in trouble, get you on the front page of the paper, the lawsuits and such. How do you teach this? Do you have a class on it? Do you have interaction with that? I mean, how do we teach the soft skills, so to speak, that in the majority that, I mean, we could teach them computer skills and such, but the ones that gets the majority of people in trouble is the lack of knowledge on labor laws and policies and procedures and that the conflict resolution and such. So how do we go about ensuring that our not even new company officers, there might be some older company officers that don't have the knowledge to be able to deal with this, and it's getting us in trouble and on the front page of newspapers. Anyone?
Yeah, Chief, I think we sort of talked about it a little bit before, like this generation coming in, they're used to everybody having a cell phone. They're used to there being cameras everywhere. So they're coming in with a whole different mindset, maybe than some of our older officers who weren't used to everything that they were doing being put on blast. So we may have an advantage with new officers in that they know they're being watched, where, you know, an older generation has this sort of like, well, what happens in the firehouse stays in the firehouse. So I think we may be crossing the threshold there, but also when you're teaching people about being an officer, it's, you know, it's about doing the right thing when somebody's watching and when they're not watching. It's, you know, treating the same person the same way over and over again, and sort of running all of your thoughts through the filter of, if my mom knew, or if this was on the paper, would it be okay? And just adding that extra layer of sort of rationalizing in before they make a decision, so that they're aware that this is a new, like, this is the new world where everything you do is going to be recorded. It's going to be played back, and you really have to be cognizant of what you're doing and the decisions that you're making. And I think the more we can sort of educate our older members and sort of leverage our newer members to really realize this, the better off we're going to be.
Heather, you made an excellent point that this, the newer firefighters that are the ones probably promoting now did grow up with the cell phones and the cameras are everywhere and everybody's watching you and taking pictures and such. And they probably are a lot more observant of that and realize that everything they're doing could be on camera in a moment. And then once it's on camera, it's going to be on social media. And once social media gets a hold of it, it's possibly going to be on the news. So that's an excellent point that you made, that they probably are a little more, they recognize more that does happen nowadays.
I think that a lot of the sports teams and, you know, opportunities that the kids are having these days in school are going to help them with this conflict resolution thing. But I also think that depending on what your personality type is, you may not be as upfront to dealing with problems as quickly as they need to be dealt with. So teaching a good model of investigation and curiosity of when you see a problem, and talking to people and having conversations, coming up with good solutions, and then most importantly, following up with, are these solutions working, and is everybody working well together? I think we have to teach that model still, even though it's old. It's such a valuable model, and it's so easy to continue to follow, and it creates that opportunity once again to improve our communications, because we know that so many of the problems that we have in the firehouse are communication issues. It's you know, on the fire ground and in the firehouse. So if we can help give them a model and help them practice with that model, I think that all of their experiences are going to make them be able to apply that a little more easily than we maybe had to.
I agree. So we're just out about time. So I would, Heather, did you have something to add or no?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, the other layer to all of this is making sure that people know what's acceptable and what's not, and then holding them to that standard. Because like anything, if you give people an inch, they're going to take a mile. So really, you know, presenting what the policy is or the city, you know, the city standard or whatever it is, and then making sure that you fairly and consistently hold people to that standard so that you don't have this thing kind of grow out of control where you have personnel problems or issues that have gone unchecked.
Chief, if I can real quick, I know we're almost done. To add to what Heidi and Heather are saying, we could, you know, without breaching any type of confidentiality agreement, maybe some of these instances that are happening within our departments, kind of take those back to, you know, do some roundtable discussions to put the issue out there and to see how they would handle it. Because then it teaches them, okay, this is a real scenario. It's not something we're making up. It can happen to you. And now how do you mitigate this before it gets to that point? Maybe giving them the results of, hey, this is what happened because the company officer did not step in at this point, and then using it as a learning experience. So I think that's one additional thing to add to help them develop their conflict resolution.
I think that's really an excellent idea. You could find, I mean, even talk to people from neighboring departments or just look on the internet and see what's occurred in fire departments, and then have like a round table with your company officers. I mean, you could do it even on Zoom and do it on Zoom. Like, hey, this happened in this agency. How would we handle this? And this is, you know, there might be a better way and such. So I want to thank each guest for being a part of the radio show. I want to thank Fire Engineering again. Thank you to all the listeners and members of Women in Fire. And remind our listeners to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and to check out our website, womeninfire.org, and as well as to register for our conference that will be in Orange County, Florida in September. We look forward to seeing you at our conference, and thank you to my guests.